We're ready.
All righty. Well, good morning, everyone. I call this regularly scheduled meeting of the commission to order. It is 10 o'clock on Wednesday, August 18th of 2021. I'm Commissioner Julie Fedorchak. Also present with me are Commissioners Randy Crispin and Brian Crosius. So we have a quorum. I'm going to let my colleagues go first with opening comments. Commissioner Crispin, do you have any?
I do. I'm pretty excited about it, too. But I didn't bring a copy of it with me, so now I may be forgetting some details. But you should have a press release that was issued either this morning or maybe late yesterday. We actually got the official notice, I think, late Monday night. But the Office of Surface Mining has recognized our abandoned mine land program with a pretty major award. And I really want to emphasize the importance of that. And maybe it almost gets downplayed because they're a little like these, I don't want to mention any particular programs, but a program that is located at the North Dakota State University and goes by the name of Bison Football. And people get just used to the major successes. This is our third time that we've gotten this award since 2016, or an award from them. But among states that have these abandoned mine lands, there is this program to repair these. These are for lands that were mined before the federal reclamation laws went into effect in the mid-70s. And the program is funded by a tax that is on active coal mining. So this only exists because of active coal mining, but then states are awarded a grant back from that pool of money by the Office of Surface Mining, and we pick out these projects. In this case, the award comes from a foam sand project we did up by Noonan, North Dakota. And for years, we've been doing this exploratory drilling, and then where there are potential problems, filling it in with a grout mix instead of waiting for a collapse and a problem. We're attacking some of these in advance before a road or a building or something collapses. And it's worked pretty well, but as grout is getting more expensive and harder to come by, our staff worked and found a solution that involved this foam sand and takes a lot less grout then. And so we did this project on, I think it was 60-some holes, and filled them in. And initially, we're going to continue monitoring it to make sure there's not subsidence later. But initially, it looks very good, like it did, in fact, fill these voids very well. And I just can't help believe that by filling these tunnels in advance like this, we are saving a lot of costs for in the future when they would subsequently collapse, because you can't have these voids down there and assume that hundreds of years are going to go by and nothing's going to happen. Many of these are eventually going to collapse. So, A, the program is set for ending here very soon. Hopefully it will be extended, and extended in a way that uses it for abandoned mine land reclamation, not used for something else. But B, kudos to our staff for coming up with a way that I'm sure other states are going to copy going forward. Saves resources, saves costs, and allows us to take care of a lot more of these projects with the same dollars. And so, thank you, staff. Job well done.
Very good. I echo those congratulations and insert eye roll on the comparison to NDSU. But I would say that I think our staff and their accomplishments are much better than what other institutions might accomplish and have more lasting impact on the citizens of the state. So with that, Commissioner Crosius.
Well, I'm not going to dignify that part with a response. But congratulations to staff on a job well done. it's always nice when we can talk about things like that versus rate cases and other things. So, but it takes a lot of work behind the scenes, and it just doesn't happen by accident. So could not be more impressed with your achievement, and congratulations to all of you and portfolio holder, Commissioner Christman. Nicely done.
Madam Chair, if I could just add one more thing on that. It's kind of a common word in government, very popular to talk about innovation. Here is the classic example of it. Not talking about it, but actually providing it. This is a major innovation in abandoned mine land reclamation.
Okay. With that, we have a couple items on consent and previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, moving on to the regular agenda. I have one item on my portfolio. I move the commission adopt the order on tree and shrub mitigation specifications in Meadowlark LLC new Frontier Wind Energy Project, McHenry County, citing application case number PU-11-69.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. So this is pretty straightforward. We passed a new tree and shrub mitigation specification plan. The company, this company was out of compliance with their one that they had agreed to do when they were permitted. And so in an effort to bring them into compliance, we offered them the opportunity, and all other companies who are out of compliance, the opportunity to adopt the newer version that we had approved in 2019. And this company decided they wanted to do that. And so this order basically moves the changes the tree and shrub mitigation specifications applications, incorporates the newer one into the final order that we approved for them when they were permitted. And that's the sum total of it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none.
I would just say that there's probably going to be a few of these moving forward. This is kind of, we did a whole bulk of these. Staff did a number of letters out to anybody who was out of compliance with tree and shrub mitigation plans and offered for those the opportunity to adopt the newer specifications. And so I would anticipate that we'll have a few of these in the future to be adopting as well.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Steve. And that concludes my portfolio. It's your turn, Randy.
I move the commission adopt the consent order in Quest Corporation telephone outage, Aminia area, application case number PU-21-237.
Second.
On May 17th of this year, a portion of Quest system near Aminia, which is north of Castleton, failed, causing an outage to approximately 21 customers. Our staff concluded that a power supply shelf unit failed, causing a lack of power to be supplied to the customers' lines. In fairness to the company, the testimony we got on it, that was not contradicted by anyone, so I take it at word that this is not something that normally would happen, and so it's not an item that you might typically have on hand, and with supply chain issues, it took a long time to get it replaced, and so that was unfortunate. When customers contacted Quest's customer service center, though, they were given inaccurate information and led to believe that the service would be restored within a short period of time. And that is one of the things that disappointed me the most in this, that their customer service people weren't forthright. And so after being told that they would have service in a short period of time, they began calling here, and it was our staff that ended up having to do a lot of the homework. Quest replaced the shelf unit and restored service to customers on July 13th of just last month, so it was out for almost 2 months. Our staff concluded the Quest did not promptly correct the trouble to the 21 Aminia customers. Service is required by North Dakota Administrative Code and failed to provide adequate services required by North Dakota Century Code. So Quest and the PSA have agreed to resolve the matter without further administrative proceedings, and Quest Corporation will pay a fine of $2,000.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission approve bond release number 5 to surface coal mining permit number BNCR-9401 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Center Mine to release all reclamation liabilities on 43.6 acres located in portions of sections 5 and 8, Township 141 North, Range 83 West, Oliver County. No monetary release is being requested since the current bond amount is based on the worst case reclamation condition for permit BNCR-9401. The release will become effective September 17th, 2021, unless a formal hearing is requested in BNI Coal Limited Bond Release 5, permit BNCR-9401 application, PSC case number RC-20-78.
Second.
So on February 11th of 2020, before the pandemic really struck, BNI filed for final bond release on these 43.6 acres that was mined and subsequently developed as a solid waste disposal facilities. This was cell number 4 that they've done this on. The bond release acreage has an industrial post-mining land use now. The acres are located in portions of two sections in Oliver County and are owned by Minn Kota Power Cooperative. Oliver County approved industrial zoning for the area back in 1992, and the Department of Environmental Quality, which was then the Department of Health, issued a solid waste disposal permit to Minn Kota in 1995 and renewed it again in 2015. Privately owned coal was removed from this tract in 2017. Dreadfully, the federal coal within this tract, which was just a few acres, was not mined and is left in place forever. All the work had to go into, everything was done that could have just as well taken it, but because of the slowness of the federal government, they spent almost 10 years waiting for a decision, and they finally needed the ash pit, and so federal coal was left in place, and the ash pit will run out of space sooner than would have had to be if the coal had been removed. It is just so frustrating in that regard. But anyway, they've been operating the disposal cell. They started in 2018. It's still under use. Sufficient amounts of topsoil and subsoil have been placed in stockpiles for when the disposal cell is closed and reclaimed. Three other cells, like I mentioned, were previously bond released. The formal bond release inspection in this case was conducted in May of 2020. County commissioners and several federal and state agencies were invited to participate. Minn Kota, the surface owner, was represented there by Mr. Scott Hopfoff, and Dallas Grossman from the Department of Environmental Quality participated in the inspection. Neither expressed any concerns with the bond release tract. Notice of the final bond release app was published by BNI in the official county newspaper, which is the Center Republican, during March and April of 2020. No objections to the bond release were received. The bond amount, as I mentioned, is not being reduced because it's based on their total worst case scenario. The fact that this was so much as work was done early last year and this is just happening now, there was just basically some paperwork that we sent to the company, and they took a long time in responding to it. And so the delay had nothing to do with reclamation or anything like that, just based on their timeline. So our reclamation division has completed its review and recommends the application be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
I move the commission approve the Coteau Properties Company's request for variance to the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for 4.9 acres of reclaimed land in Section 16 of Township 146 North, Range 88 West, Mercer County, permit NACT-9501, where revegetation was delayed on areas occupied by a sedimentation pond and stockpiles in the Coteau Properties Company variance, permit NACT-9501, application PSC, case number RC-21-90.
Second.
This variance from that 10-year revegetation period will allow this small area affected by a sedimentation pond and some stockpiles to be bond released with the adjacent lands. And the adjacent lands were reclaimed in 2012. We have a policy memorandum, it's number 20, that allows us to grant variances, but the variances must be small in size when compared to the entire reclamation tract, and the affected land must meet the reclamation success standards when the bond release is requested. So this less than 5 acre variance will be attached to 60 acres that's adjacent to it, and it's reclaimed native grassland. It was seeded back in 2012. The variance area, the 5 acres, was reclaimed and seeded 2 years later in 2014. Approval of the variance request will allow Coteau to pursue final bond release on the entire piece 2 years earlier than otherwise allowed. And so the Reclamation Division has completed its review of the request and recommends approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
My last item, I move the commission approve revision number 5-8 to surface coal mining permit number NACT-8102 held by the Coteau Properties Company to delete all 1,352.47418 acres from this permit and transfer all reclamation liabilities on this acreage to permit number NACT-1801 for the Freedom Mine in Coteau Properties Company, Revision 58, permit NACT-8102, application PSC case number RC-21-107.
Second.
This may sound familiar because we started on this last meeting or the meeting before, and there'll be a couple more of these coming. This permit approved in February started the process when we consolidated all almost 5,300 acres of 5 different permits into one. The coal mining is complete in this entire area. Most of the acreage is in reclamation status, but portions of the consolidated permit area are still used to support mining in other permit areas. So permit 8102 that we're talking about here today will be effectively terminated with approval of this order. However, the acres, like I say, remain in permit 1801, the consolidated one. The existing self and collateral bonds that total $186 million are sufficient to cover the entire consolidated bond area for Coteau. So the Reclamation Division has completed its review of the permit application and recommends revision approval. And as I indicated, there'll be a couple more of these coming to get rid of the old permits now that they're consolidated into one.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
So, Commissioner Christman, I talked to Dean about this a little bit yesterday, and if there's any way to streamline this process so that the consolidation and into one and the dissolving of the old permits happens at the same time, it seems like that would be more efficient. I don't know where the requirements are to, you know, who's involved or what notices are involved, et cetera, but it seems like an extremely significant amount of paperwork shuffling for the mines, for our staff and everybody to keep, you know, having to go through each one of these. There's five of them, and then another company, I guess, is going to be consolidating some of these older permits that were smaller into one larger permit. But just feels like there might be some room for innovation and streamlining in this particular part of the application or regulation of the mine. So I just throw it out there for as a, something that it would be nice if staff and portfolio holder and legal would look at.
And we can work on that, but my understanding of it is the consolidation is done. We're done with that, and now it's a matter of just releasing these. And so as the mine gets their paperwork done and submits it, we're checking it over, making sure it's fine, and releasing them. And so I suppose the alternative might be so we don't have to keep bringing it up to hold them then, but then does someone look at us and say, yeah, they had that paperwork for months and didn't do it. So I think staff has been trying to be responsive and move whatever we have as quickly as possible. So, but we'll work on that because, yes, it does seem repetitive to keep talking about the same thing. So we'll see what we can do.
Well, yeah, that's or if the consolidation and releasing happens at the same time. Like, why do they have to do that separately? I don't know.
I think a lot of it depends on their paperwork, but I'll double check those things and make sure. I don't want to point fingers either.
Right.
Positive.
Okay. Thank you.
That concludes my portfolio.
Did we vote on that?
No.
I think we're still discussing.
Well, that's because it's still as good an idea as it was before.
Let's finish it.
Can you repeat everything, man?
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved. That helps my paperwork.
Excellent. All right. And we have more damage prevention to talk about and some other exciting stuff in your portfolio.
We do. We do, we do.
Are you going to reorder these in any way?
Yes, I'm moving BK5 after BK3, so we'll group the damage prevention and then continue on with 4, 6, 7, and 8.
Excellent.
So my first one, I move the Commission adopt the Order on Consent Agreement and Public Service Commission, BMG Oilfield Services Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-20-210.
Second.
So this is a complaint that stemmed from last May in 2020. A one-call complaint was received from Kinder Morgan alleging a violation by BNG Oilfield Services of the one call excavation notice system as defined by North Dakota Century Code. Commission sent a letter to BNG, and BNG did file a response, and this past July, a consent agreement between Public Service Commission advocacy staff and BNG was filed for resolution of the complaint. BNG Oil Services is located in Williston, North Dakota. The work that was actually being done was, I thought I had that highlighted. Well, it was north of Watford City. And the complaint is that there wasn't, while there wasn't any damage to any underground facility as a result of the excavation that occurred, the excavation began prior to the location period of receiving notice that all facilities had been located. And so the facilities hadn't been located yet, but the work began. And that is a violation when you begin excavation prior to receiving notice that all facilities have been located. BNG and advocacy staff did engage in good faith discussions to come up with a settlement in the amount of $500 with $250 suspended on the condition that BNG commit no further violations within a period of 5 years. So again, this was to the north of Watford City where the work was being done, and it was related to a hydro excavation to verify the location of another line in that area. So BNG jumped the gun and got working on the project before they thought they would, which on the ticket they indicated it would be May 13th. They asked for an excavation notice on May 8th, but they began digging on May 8th, or beginning the work on May 8th. So they were early, and essentially they did not have a ticket in place at the time. So again, the fine was $500 with $250 suspended.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And I should probably, should have noted this at the beginning of the four damage prevention orders, but I said this, I believe, either at the last commission meeting or the time before, but since 2014, the number of violations, the cases and complaints coming before the commission continues to decrease. This has been a good, positive trend over the last 7 years. And I think even prior to that, in comparison with other states, the number of complaints was still relatively low, but it's improved continuously. And that is a testament to staff, because it's a damage prevention is the portfolio, call before you dig, and we talk a lot about that. But that encompasses enforcement, but also education and awareness. So the more we can continue to participate in with North Dakota One Call and work with them to heighten awareness for excavators and operators alike, the fewer instances and occurrences we'll see. And that's obviously a positive. So there is a lot of work that goes into this behind the scenes. Victor and Stacy do quite a bit of that work. Adam and Marcus are now also getting involved with it. And Pat, of course, the director, is involved with overseeing the work as well. So the best enforcement always is that no lines are hit and that we don't have to talk about these particular cases. But just wanted to recognize why we do the program and the positive direction it's been going, thanks to the efforts of staff. So on the next one, because we did take a vote on that one, correct, Steve?
Correct.
On BK1?
Yeah.
I better double check. Okay, on the next one, I move the commission adopt the order and consent agreement in Public Service Commission Magnum Electric Incorporated damage prevention enforcement case number PU-20-279.
Second.
Okay, this stems from a one-call complaint that the commission received from Montana Dakota Utilities alleging a violation by Magnum Electric, again, of North Dakota Century Code, one-call excavation notice system. As a result of that complaint coming in, the commission sent a letter to Magnum Electric enclosing the complaint, and I don't believe we did receive a response from Magnum, but subsequently this past July, a consent agreement between PSC advocacy staff and Magnum Electric was filed for resolution of the complaint. Magnum Electric is a business located in West Fargo. This particular complaint, Magnum Electric began an excavation while performing parking lot installation in Bismarck. There is no evidence of Magnum Electric providing excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call Notification Center prior to beginning the excavation. As a result of the work that they were doing, MDU's 1.25-inch natural gas service line in that area was damaged. The repair cost was approximately $1,200. And one MDU customer, natural gas service customer, was affected by the incident. The complaint alleges that Magnum Electric violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation or location notice before beginning the excavation. And that is what advocacy staff concluded as well, that had occurred. They did work with Magnum Electric, they being advocacy staff, on a consent agreement. And under the consent agreement, Magnum Electric agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $1,500 with $750 suspended on the condition that they commit no further violations of North Dakota One Call law within 5 years of the date of the order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, next I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission North Country Contracting LLC damage prevention enforcement case number PU-20-362.
Second.
Okay, this goes back to this past, or I should say to August of 2020, the commission received a North Dakota One Call complaint again from Montana Dakota Utilities alleging a violation by North Country Contracting of North Dakota Century Code, again, the One Call excavation notice system. Again, a letter was sent to North Country Contracting. They did file a response last September, and then this past July, a consent agreement between Public Service Commission advocacy staff and North Country Contracting was filed for resolution of this complaint. North Country Contracting is a business located in Moorhead, Minnesota. And on May 4th, this all stems from going back to May 4th of 2020, North Country Contracting provided an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call Center with work to begin on May 7th of 2020. The excavation notice was for work being done here in Bismarck. The expiration date for the ticket was May 28th, 2020. On July 29th of 2020, 31 days after the expiration date of the ticket, North Country Contracting personnel began the excavation as defined in North Dakota Century Code. At the location cited in the excavation notice, again, that was in Bismarck, Hawkins Street to be exact. As a result of the excavation, an estimated $1,500 of damage was caused to a 1 1/4 inch natural gas service line. One MDU natural gas service customer was affected by the incident. And the complaint alleges, therefore, that North Country Contracting violated Century Code for failure to renew its excavation or location request prior to the expiration of the 21-day period. So it was an expired ticket, which essentially means they did not have a ticket anymore, a valid ticket. It's important that those are renewed after the 21-day period, and the 21-day period is specific for a very good reason. Markings can bleach out with rainfall. Flags can be removed. So you're really, over the course of time, the assurance that it's properly marked isn't there, because things, again, can happen with the flags, can happen with the markings. So it's important that contractors are aware that when the ticket expires, either prior to its expiration to get it renewed or to get a new ticket and get it marked again. And while it's redundant, it's important. As a result of the discussions between advocacy staff and North Country Contracting, the settlement discussions resulted in North Country Contracting being assessed a civil penalty of $2,000, again, for operating with an expired ticket. And that would be payable within 10 business days of service of an order accepting or approving the consent agreement. And I will be supporting this one as well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
So on this one, Commissioner Crosius, I was curious, was it the case that the markings were gone and that's why they struck the line, or do we know?
We don't know. At least I don't know. That's not a part of the conversation I had with staff when we were going through these. So,
because it could have been that they weren't also doing the... Yeah. Digging carefully in a careful and prudent manner, if they, but that wasn't the allegation here. So I was just curious if the markings were gone or if they were mismarked and they, right. You know.
Well, you know, that's a really good point. So here's how the process goes, the order, so to speak. If there isn't a ticket and digging isn't done in a careful and prudent manner and a facility is hit, a line is hit, the way the law works and the order of progression, if there is not a ticket in place, the violation is no ticket. Mm-hmm. If a ticket were in place and the exact same digging occurred, and the line is hit, then you're exactly right. Then the violation is not digging in a careful and prudent manner. If a ticket is in place and the line isn't marked correctly, then the ticket's in place, then the violation becomes inaccurate marking of the lines. So once there isn't a ticket, which occurs either before a ticket is valid or because someone didn't call for file an excavation notice, or it expired after 21 days, then the only violation we can apply is no ticket. So that's what this one is. Once a ticket is in place, though, those other variables come into play to be evaluated should an violation occur. I don't know if I understand
that you know there wasn't a valid ticket, so that's automatically a you know that's what the issue is, but I do think it's worth knowing whether the markings were gone or whether the markings, because they still hit the line, were they not visible markings or were the markings wrong? Not that it changes the violation, but it's helpful to know because of the next one that's coming up. It's the same company.
I would say the odds, even though the next one would differ from this, it's very rare the lines aren't marked correctly. It can happen. And we saw that in a case approximately, I'm trying to think if it was a year ago or this past spring or past winter, it might have been this past winter, where a line was hit during some fencing work because it was mismarked, albeit by a few inches, but you know, 24 inches is 24 inches. So it can happen. Typically, line hits, are the result of not digging in a careful and prudent manner.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, now here's the next one. This is BK5 that is going to run ahead of BK4. I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement to the Public Service Commission, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU-21-142.
Second.
Okay, and again, going back to our previous conversation, I think on the previous two damage prevention orders that I talked about, both were reported by MDU. This is an instance where MDU had the complaint filed against them. And this occurred on April 14th of this year, 2021. The commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Central Trenching, alleging a violation by Montana Dakota Utilities Company of the North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 49-23, the one-call excavation notice system. The commission did send a letter to MDU enclosing the complaint, and MDU did file a response to the complaint. And that occurred in April, toward the end of April, and then on July 21st of this year, a consent agreement between PSC advocacy staff and MDU is filed for resolution of the complaint. This stems from a complaint that actually, or not a complaint, but work that was done in May of 2020. So the work was being done in May in 2020. Central personnel provided an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call Notification Center with work to begin on May 12th of 2020. And again, the complaint was just filed this past April. So sometimes when the work occurs, well, not sometimes, but the work occurs, there can be a significant lag time on when complaints are filed. So you really have to look at when the complaints are received. This one was about 9 months after the, or I take that back, 11 months after the excavation notice was actually provided. So the work was to begin on May 12th of 2020. The work was installing underground cable. at an intersection, or at the intersection of 37th Avenue Southwest and 4th Street Southwest in Minot. Central began its excavation and the location cited in the excavation notice. As a result of the excavation work, MDU's 2-inch natural gas main line was damaged approximately 9 feet from the nearest locate marks. So you have the marks on the ground. This was the line strike occurred 9 feet from that. And the complaint then alleges that MDU violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to mark its underground facilities within 24 inches horizontally of either side of the center line of that facility. So there's 24 inches of leeway. Well, I shouldn't say leeway, but that's where excavators have to be very careful within that 24-inch zone and hand dig and find the pipes that way, or the facility, whichever, you know, whether it's a pipe, fiber optic cable. This was 9 feet away. So MDU confirmed that they did not locate and mark the underground facility within 24 inches horizontally. And again, for marking purposes, the requirement is that it is it includes a strip of land 2 feet on either side of the underground facility. Advocacy staff concluded MDU violated North Dakota Century Code. They engaged in good faith settlement discussions, and as a result of that discussion, MDU agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $7,500, with $2,500 suspended on the condition that they commit no further violation of the North Dakota One Call Law within 3 years of the date of the order accepting this consent agreement. So this is obviously the question is, how can a facility be marked so inaccurately? Because it wasn't within a few inches, it was the markings were off by 7 feet. And MDU believes that during the locate process for that facility, there was line bleed, I believe, a cable line was in the same proximity. You can actually have what's called bleed on the signal. It bled onto the cable, and it was marked according to where the cable actually was. And of course, you're just, as a locator, you're standing above ground, and you can't see what's below. You're marking based on signal. So the signal bled off. It could have certainly been a very serious situation. Anytime you're hitting any type of this facility, whether it's electric or natural gas in particular, there is the potential to have serious injury and or death result from that line hit. So it's a serious infraction. It's again a message to all locators, which are typically third-party locators contracted by the company, but nonetheless the company, the operator of the facility, is responsible for that locator, whether they're on staff, whether they're contracted. So thankfully, there wasn't an injury that resulted from this particular line hit, but it's just a strong message to all locators and operators to double check your work, to know that it's been marked correctly, because once the excavator shows up, they trust the markings, and you get beyond the 2 foot 24-inch point on either side of that center line that's marked, that means you can start using a backhoe or other type of equipment to mechanically move the dirt and perform the work that needs to be done. So you're trusting those marks and believing in what they indicate on the ground. So very important. And I think this is also an instance where it's not just the operators that file complaints. Excavators also have a voice in this as well. And when lines are mismarked or they're not marked in a timely fashion, excavators have every right to file a complaint and bring it to our attention.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
So this one is really troubling for me because MDU is one of our two big natural gas providers in the state, have extensive underground systems, and they have to be the experts at locating this underground infrastructure. And 9 feet is just an incredible variance. I understand the explanation, but we have to be able to trust the system better than that. And so I personally think the penalty is too light on this consent agreement. And I don't like that there's $2,500 of it that is suspended. So I'm actually not going to support this one today for those reasons. The natural gas system for contractors out digging can be deadly, and we have to count on the owners of that infrastructure to identify that a lot better than what happened in this case.
Oh, that's fair. One thing I will point out, this is the exact same fine that was applied to Verendry Electric when an individual digging fence posts on a mismarked line hit the line. And it was a $7,500 fine with $2,500 suspended, 5,000 payables. So when advocacy staff was working with the company, they did use that as a baseline, which was approved by the commission unanimously at the time. So I think their reasoning and logic in terms of why they applied those specific numbers coincided with another line hit, and actually that individual in that particular case suffered, according to them, some degree of electrocution. So again, another very serious matter. But from a consistency standpoint, because I asked that same question, how did that amount mm-hmm. surface, and after hearing the explanation, it is consistent with one that we approved not that terribly long ago.
I appreciate that. In that case, we were talking about inches and some, you know, question on some of the markings. I supported that because there was an injury. But 9 feet is just way too big of a variance, and I think I hope that MDU gets a message. They need to be working with whoever the contractor was and getting to the bottom of that, because that's not acceptable. Can't have that kind of a variance. I don't care what the excuse is for the line bleeds. It's just, it doesn't work, and it's going to discredit the credibility of the locating system and people's faith in it. So I this one is just a pretty big deal in my mind.
Is there any further discussion?
So if we vote no, then there's really no penalty. And so I think that would send a worse message. Maybe this, maybe it should have been requested to be held up and had a work session to discuss it or something like that. But at this point, I'm going to support it, because I think that there does need to be a penalty, and I just don't feel comfortable voting no and letting them off completely.
My understanding is if we don't approve it, the staff would have to go back and renegotiate, that the case just doesn't close. But that's, you know, that's fine too.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay.
Nay.
Motion is approved.
Okay, my next one, now we're going to go back to BK4. I move the commission adopt the order on settlement agreement to Northern States Power Company 2021 electric rate increase application case number PU-20-441.
Second.
Okay, we've talked about this particular case ad nauseum. it's been going since the request was filed by NSP on November 6th of 2020. They filed a request for a rate increase. We've been working on processing this, and I had alluded to this earlier. This isn't the most attractive part of the job, rate regulation, and I would argue it's as challenging as any portfolio, because it isn't often that you deliver good news. And when we deliver good news, it's easy to make comments and give thoughts. When we deliver bad news, it's not as popular. But when I signed up for the job, I knew this would be a part of it. When I found that this would be, and we discussed, part of my portfolio actually embraced this component, because I look at it as an opportunity to ensure both reliability and also to balance that with affordability. I think they're the two biggest points. Rate cases are not just about affordability, a very important component, but they're also about reliability as well. And North Dakota ranks number one in reliability when you look at EIA statistics from 2019. I haven't seen the 2020 numbers, but North Dakota ranks number one. Best state in the nation when it comes to reliability. 13th best in the nation, again, according to EIA, a very credible source. 13th in the nation for the lowest cost electricity. So there are more components and factors, but those are two really good numbers. And when you look at a rate case, and I've talked about these components so many times, I'm not going to go back through the timeline and whatnot. This is finalizing the settlement agreement that was put in place and agreed to, not only by advocacy staff, but also by the intervener, AARP. They were also in favor of this settlement agreement. But this is our opportunity to make sure that the proper investments are being made as we go through a rate case, again, to ensure reliability, but also keeping energy affordable. And I don't think there's a situation where you can be the lowest cost provider and also the most reliable at the same time, because reliability takes reasonable investment. And I think the stats, statistics that I pointed out, 13th lowest in electric, the cost of electricity, and the first best in terms of reliability, shows that we are striking a very good balance. I'd like to see affordability improve just a little bit, that ranking. But I think we also have to recognize that if the states that are the lowest don't fare as well on the reliability side. So we want to make sure we keep the lights on, houses cool, houses warm, whether it's hot summer months or cold winter months. But this started, again, back in November. The company asked for $22.2 million, a 10.8% increase. They filed again a few months after that. Readjusted their numbers down to $19.2 million, or a 9.3% increase. The settlement is a $7.1 million increase, or 3.4%, so significantly less than what the company was requesting. Because it was significantly less, there will be refunds to customers. That amount will be approximately $26, because the company has been collecting interim rates, which North Dakota Century Code gives companies, the investor-owned utilities, that ability. And just some of the points, the basic fixed charge for customers receiving service from NSP will change from $14.50 to $15. So the fixed charge will go up by 50 cents a month. The volumetric charge, those charges will also go up, but by significantly less than what the company was asking for. So the question is, how do you get from the $19.2 million, or even the starting point of $22.2 million, down to 7.1 million. The biggest component from a dollar standpoint is the return that the company is receiving. They asked for 10.2%. They were at 9.85. The percentage that was approved is 9.5%. So that, in my opinion, is the most significant part of the settlement in terms of what will have the greatest long-term benefit to ratepayers. And that return dropping to 9.5% accomplishes that. And that resulted in an approximate decrease of $3.3 million. So that was the biggest decrease. The second biggest decrease in terms of how the numbers decline from what the company was asking for, the next in line would be the Sherco units, the coal units that they have in Minnesota, Sherco 1 and Sherco 2. But I think it's, you know, we have to understand that they asked for early recovery of the undepreciated balance. We said no. The company will continue, however, on an annual basis, as long as the units are operating, to collect a smaller amount, but that $2.684 million will slowly go down over the course of time. The other part that will occur along the way as well, they won't get as large a return in terms of total dollars because that base amount is decreasing and their rate of return is based on whatever the undepreciated balance is at the time. So as that undepreciated balance goes down, so does the return that the company receives on those units. So that will be a benefit to ratepayers as that number shrinks. But it's very likely the company will come back in if they do move ahead with an early retirement of those units. It's highly likely that they will, in my opinion, that they'll come back and ask for recovery on whatever the undepreciated balance is at the time. And it could be a 1.5, it could be 1.7 million. But this doesn't change the fact that those units are still being collected on. It just changes the time frame, and we're just saying no to the early recovery right now. There were other parts of that, the advanced, or I should say the customer metering and distribution management system, which they proposed. We said no on that for now. That was another $1.6 million. There were a number of other elements, but I think it's a good settlement. No one likes a rate increase, but at the same time, no one likes it when the lights don't turn on when you flip the switch. So we have to do the things that ensure long-term reliability, and I think this strikes a good balance. It's not perfect. I don't think a settlement can ever be perfect. There are things I really like about it. There are some elements I don't. I would have liked to see a slightly lower return that the company can receive. But another point on that is capped. 9.5 is what the settlement allows for. The 9.75, or if they go beyond 9.75, they have to return that to customers. So we did put a ceiling in place as well, offering another level of protection from a rate standpoint. So what the company asked for and what they're receiving, have been receiving in terms of interim rates, customers are actually going to see lower bills once this is implemented. Once this is approved, the company will implement it. The bills that customers receive next month, for example, will be lower than the bills they're experiencing now, but slightly higher than what they were, say, a year ago. So from what they're currently seeing, their bills are going to go down. What they were a year ago, they will be up slightly. But again, a very nice piece of work, I think, by the customers overall, and or by the advocacy staff overall. I think they really carried the load on this, and and worked really hard on behalf of ratepayers. And again, I don't think there's such a thing as a perfect settlement, but I think it's certainly favorable, and it accomplishes what needs to be accomplished from both the reliability and affordability standpoint. Now, with that said, I'm one of three votes. I can't, as we saw in the last vote, carry this across the finish line on my own. So I have one out of three votes. I'm going to vote to support this. And those are simply my thoughts without getting into all of the other pieces that, again, have been talked about, I think, extensively. So I just wanted to give some different color on this as we finalize this particular case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Do you want to go?
Sure. First of all, you know, Commissioner, you mentioned some of the statistics about North Dakota's excellent reliability and pretty low rates, but I can't remember, I think you said 13th lowest in the nation, and wishing they were better. And I imagine people hear that and say, yeah, well, why aren't we even better than 13th? And you mentioned that reliability kind of conflicts to an extent with being low cost, because they can work against each other. The other thing I thought should be pointed out, when you compare states' overall average electric costs, the density of the population is a big factor too. And so when you compare states, we're being compared to most states with a much higher density. And when it comes to distributing electricity, that makes a huge difference. So to think that North Dakota would be one or two or three would almost be an absurd expectation with our low population density. On to something else that I think needs to be mentioned. Now, of course, this involves a company that's a member of MISO, and I have a lot more knowledge of the direction that companies that have membership in SPP are going, but I'm pretty confident that what I'm going to say, there's not that much difference. and so all of our regulated utilities are MISO members. These companies don't really have a lot of choice but to be members of a large multi-state regional transmission organization. FERC, going back to the 90s, really limited their options. And so now, based on where I see things going in SPP, and like I say, I think it's the same here, the fact of the matter is, unless we take a dramatic change in this country, we are implementing the Green New Deal with or without the title. And partially, it's the federal government doing it. Partially, it's Wall Street doing it through environmental governance policies. But it's being imposed on the membership of these regional transmission organizations. And the transmission costs that the RTOs are going to have to pass on to these companies in order to rewire this vast system are extraordinary. And sadly, if the country keeps going in the direction it is, this rate increase is a matter of, you ain't seen nothing yet. And I don't know what we as an individual state commission can do. I know our commission works very hard through the RTOs, through NARUC, to do what we can to slow this thing down or limit some of the damages. But part of that also includes making sure that people who don't work with it every day are aware of what's happening. And so that's why I'm taking advantage of every soapbox opportunity I get. And that's what I want to do, is just emphasize, if our country is going to go in the direction it is going, there's going to be a lot more of these.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, as much as I hate to try to follow that, I have a couple thoughts too. To Randy's comments, I have similar concerns in terms of the impact that the policy changes that people that are being driven largely by politicians who don't understand the physics of the grid. Those policy decisions have significant ramifications on everyday North Dakotans and everyday Americans. And while it's an uphill battle for sure, I feel like the three of us in our roles have to be like the little engine that could and just keep trying, keep making the points and trying to get every leadership position we can to have a soapbox on which to talk about these things in a reasonable way. Just saying, like, the technology doesn't exist to meet the deadlines that are being suggested. And the costs are going to be enormous for North Dakotans and for Americans. So we have to just have cooler heads prevail and step back and do this stuff in a pragmatic way, because Randy's right. This 3.4% increase is going to be peanuts compared to what we will be facing in the next 10 years if we try to shut down every fossil-based generation and electrify everything in this country, including our motor vehicles. That is not feasible on the timelines that are being suggested. So as it relates to this rate increase, I think we are doing our part as the little engine that could in some pretty meaningful ways. And one of them, kudos to staff on just drawing the line on the Sherco 1 and 2. The company wanted to get our buy-off on early retirement of those. They are scheduled to operate till 2035, and the company is proposing and plans to retire them on 2026 and 2023. This rate case doesn't allow them to charge North Dakotans for that yet. They will, I agree with Commissioner Crotchis, they'll come back and ask again. But for now, we're saying no. You don't get to bake those into your plans for our customers yet, and that's saving North Dakotans $2.7 million a year until these rates are adjusted again. So that's a significant savings and a significant recognition by the company that this is where North Dakota is and isn't likely to change in the near future. So I think small in the whole grand scheme of things is a really important message, because it's about reliability and affordability, and I think those are two things that we will continue to promote and insist on with our regulated utilities. This rate case settlement, there's a significant reduction in the cost increases compared to what the company asked for, $12 million. That's the biggest cost reduction I've seen since I've been on the commission, from what the company's proposed to what was settled. So that's, you know, kudos to the staff on their tough negotiations and getting some important changes for our ratepayers here in North Dakota. And the other one that Commissioner Cross just mentioned, which is significant, is the decrease in their allowable return on investment from 10.2% to 9.5%, $3.3 million annual reduction in costs for our ratepayers. That's a huge difference. And that's one of those things that I hear from ratepayers who follow this stuff a lot. It bugs them that they think that companies can just automatically get this return on top of what their investments are, that it isn't an automatic return. They do have to earn that return, but it is the allowable return, and that's been reduced in this case. So I think there's some real positives in this case, in the settlement. I'm also happy to support it today, and I think that it is another step in an ongoing conversation with this particular company whose agenda is their own agenda. It is not the agenda driven by and required by Minnesota. It goes far beyond that agenda. This is Xcel Energy's agenda. And we will continue to have differences with them on what they want to accomplish and what time frame, and do our very best to hold the ground for North Dakota ratepayers in the name of costs and reliability.
Is there any further discussion?
You know, I talked about reliability for North Dakota, and I think I'm going to throw a few more stats out that put it in perspective for our reliability rating of number one. And I agree, it's not a likely scenario when you have to cover as many miles in terms of transmission and distribution line, transmission and distribution lines to service all of the North Dakota customers in a sparsely populated state. North Dakota is the fourth least populated state in the nation. Wyoming has fewer people per square mile, but when you get in that top four, top five, you've got the wide open spaces in comparison to other states. But Montana's reliability rating is 28th. South Dakota, 20th. Wyoming, 26th. We're first. When you look at what I would consider, generally speaking, like states, that's a significant difference in how we compare. In terms of, I agree we have to keep talking. I'm going to go back to the Sherco units, and I don't do this very often, but this was shared from advisory staff. I made a point at an informal hearing several years ago when the company was floating the idea of retiring the Sherco units and the other additions that they planned to make. And staff passed along to me, advisory, that my comments at that hearing about being far less receptive, were not receptive at all, at granting early recovery, if they chose to retire a facility early. That doesn't make financial sense when you're taking something that they came in good faith many years ago and said, this is a good asset to have. This is the life expectancy of the project, which goes into the 2030s. And then they decide to change course, which they can, but it doesn't guarantee that they're going to get recovery. I made that very clear to them, and staff passed along that was heard loud and clear. So those are things we can do. And I think the other important element is working with other commissions in other states, because you have all of the MISO states, and when one commission or two or five or six or seven or eight approve different resource types that drive additional transmission needs, and these utilities, as mentioned, have to be a part of that system, literally they have to be a part of that system, or we would see an even higher increase in rates because they would have to add generation resources. They couldn't rely on that reserve pool that they do, and the reserve margins, if they were to go at it on their own, have to be considerably higher at significant cost. So I think other commissions also have to get the message in other states that it's not the road we're going down simply isn't tenable. From a practical standpoint, from a realistic standpoint, certainly not from a rate standpoint. And the people that are hurt the most in all of this are low-income households. And when you add on how much it costs to fill up a vehicle these days, and you start to layer all these things on, the cost of beef in the grocery store. And you look at all these things, a higher cost of insurance, gas didn't go up by 3.4% at the pump, it went up by 50%. But people are getting hit really hard. So I think this also, the settlement sends a message, a strong message, not just to Xcel, but to other utilities that we're going to hold you accountable, and you're going to have to toe the line on making good choices on how you operate your facilities and service customers in North Dakota. So, again, I think it's a favorable outcome, and I'm trying to think. Well, I'll just leave it at that.
Is there any further discussion?
Just one quick thing. Brian, you had mentioned earlier in your comments that customers' bills will be lower in the next month, and I just wanted to, I think you probably meant to say the rates will be lower, because the bills might not be lower because of they might have higher usage with the it's a hot spell. Their air conditioning might be on more. So yep. The rates will, I just don't want that to be a headline that bills will be
okay.
lower.
Okay.
Actually be higher, okay. but the rate will be lower.
I will rephrase that. Customer rates will be lower than what they're currently experiencing.
Yeah.
And hopefully we do see an end to the 100 degree days, because that's going to drive energy costs for households up, depending on the choices they make. But even if you keep your house a little bit warmer, or significantly warmer, even, you know, I'm sure some are keeping their homes in the low 80s, low to mid 80s. Some may not even have a window air conditioner, and so they're having to suffer through this heat, and it's not what many of us are used to, but it's a reality that there are definitely people that are faced with those circumstances.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, three left, and they're going to be easier, I think. We'll find out. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest in finding the cases involve similar questions of law or fact, I move the Commission consolidate for notice of opportunity for hearing under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04, Otter Tail Power Company, Northern Plains Electric Cooperative, Jamestown, North Dakota Service Area Agreement, Case Number PU-21-364, and Otter Tail Power Company, Jamestown, North Dakota, Public Convenience and Necessity, Case Number PU-21-365. I further move the Commission assess an application fee of $10,000 and issue a Notice of Filing and Notice of Opportunity for Consolidated Hearing in the joint application of Otter Tail Power Company and Northern Plains Electric Cooperative for approval of an electric service area agreement and the resulting issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity to establish and designate service locations to be served by Otter Tail Power Company and Northern Plains Electric Cooperative with and around the city of Jamestown, North Dakota. Case numbers PU-21-364 and PU-21-365.
Second.
Okay, I think I just set a record for the longest motion ever. So, which fortunately I haven't been talking a lot, so that was no problem. The Commission on August 9th received the joint application again from Otter Tail Power Company and Northern Plains Electric Cooperative for approval of a service area agreement to designate service locations to be served by Otter Tail Power and by Northern Plains Electric Cooperative with and around the city of Jamestown. Otter Tail again further requests issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity, authorizing it to extend service to locations within the Otter Tail Power service area set forth in the agreement. The two issues to be considered in these proceedings are whether the SAA service area agreement complies with North Dakota Century Code Section 49-03-06, and whether approval of the service area agreement and resulting certificate of public convenience and necessity issuance is compatible with the public interest. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by September 17th, 2021. If deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And I'm going to leave it at that. I think the PCNN will be an interesting one to process as a part of this consolidated case. The customer involved. However, there's trade secret protection on who that is, so we'll hold off for now.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, next on my agenda, I move the commission propose to amend the North Dakota Administrative Code as attached, issue a notice of intent to amend administrative rules and notice of public hearing, and issue an abbreviated notice of intent to amend administrative rules and notice of public hearing for publication in each official county newspaper throughout the state as required by law and Public Service Commission standards of service, electric rulemaking, case number PU-21-360.
Second.
Okay, here are the changes to Chapter 69-09-02-06. These are additions to our rules that would be applied. An electric the first would be to include that an electric public utility is responsible for ensuring reliable service. Another is if an electric public utility fails to meet its obligation to provide reliable service to customers, the commission may require action, assess disallowances or fines, or provide a penalty. A penalty, disallowance or fine, or action will take into consideration the nature, circumstances, and gravity of the violation, degree of culpability, history of prior service interruptions, and good faith attempts to ensure reliability. By April 1st of every year, each electric public utility shall file, this is another point, with the commission the records required by this section. The commission may at any time upon notice to the electric public utility require a filing of the records required by this section for a specified time period or specific interruption. And the last addition to the rules would the wording is, each electric public utility shall include in its annual April 1st filing reliability statistics for the previous calendar year, including Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers Standard 1366, indices system average interruption, frequency index, system average interruption, duration index, customer average interruption duration index, customer total average interruption, duration index, customer annual interruption frequency index, average service availability index, customers experiencing multiple interruptions, average system interruption frequency index, average system interruption duration index, monetary average interruption frequency index, and customers experiencing multiple sustained interruptions and momentary interruption events. Each utility shall include with this filing the data points used to calculate each of the above indices, a detailed breakdown of each major event day, and each of the indices listed above. And I'm not going to go through those again. These statistics will be compiled by each electric public utility for its North Dakota distribution system, for each single community, and for each important division of a community. And I'm going to make a few points. Those are the changes to the rules. As you might imagine, my throat is getting a little sore. This stems from Senate Bill 2313, in the past legislative session. When I read the original bill that was introduced, it wasn't quite as extensive as the final product in terms of the requirements of the commission, in terms of the rulemaking process, in different ways perhaps, but in my opinion, it became a little more, there was more to it. And I think you can see as the session progressed, and then there were the rolling blackouts that everyone was aware of in February. Relatively short in duration, 90 minutes, but I think in some ways that was a triggering mechanism as well in terms of some of the language changes. But just a few points on that. And again, it wasn't just the February event, but you can see how the language changed a little bit. Utilities do track interruptions. They do provide information to the commission. We've had access to this, and we continue to have access to it. This formalizes it in the rulemaking process that they will have to submit that information. Again, North Dakota does rank number one in reliability. So the thing that I struggle with a little bit, we were directed by the legislature to propagate rules related to this. This was a request from the legislative body. And it was, again, stemming from Bill 2313 that was introduced by both House and Senate leadership. And I agree with the concept in principle. But it's something in many ways that we have done, and clearly with the number one ranking have done quite well in terms of how we've gone about it. This certainly takes it up one more notch in terms of formalizing it. But I just want to make sure, to be honest, that this has to be about looking for practical, realistic solutions, and it can't be about politics. It has to be about good public service. And this has always been top of mind with the commission. And again, you don't get to be the best in terms of reliability in the country, covering as many miles as we do by accident. So it's a solution, or I think in some ways it's a solution looking for a problem that's already been solved. But I also think that it is good in terms of it is forward-looking. That's the positive I take out of it, because this commission may inevitably change over the course of time. And this will embed the philosophy and mentality that currently exists to ensure long-term reliability, and to let companies know that they have to make good decisions about their resource types in terms of generation. So maybe it's language a bit ahead of its time when you consider how the state is currently performing. But I trust it is for the right reasons in terms of why the legislative body pushed it forward. And I know reliability long-term is clearly a concern that everyone has as baseload facilities continue to decline the number and generating capacity of the fleet continues to decline. We want to make sure that we don't wind up in a position where we can't reliably deliver electricity to customers. And you look at states with high rates and their reliability is atrocious. It's terrible. And I would like to see other states that aren't doing it effectively look at this type of an approach. But I certainly don't oppose it, and we'll continue to move forward as directed and put this into rules.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
So I was a supporter of this initiative during the legislative session. I think it's another piece of North Dakota doing what we can using the jurisdiction and authority that we have to help ensure that our ratepayers are getting reliable service in an environment where the utilities are being more and more driven by policies at the RTO level. And so I think this helps us provide some additional teeth to to work with the utilities and make sure that the reliability is first and foremost in their mission. And this is a great first stab at language. This is how we envisioned it working, where we would propose language for the rules and have a good discussion with the utilities on that during the rulemaking process. So I really look forward to the input from the utilities on these proposed language, and then inevitably it gets better through that process. So I look forward to that discussion and working together with utilities to come up with the best way to measure and account for reliability in the rulemaking arena.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, and my last, I move the commission reduce the filing fee to $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing an Otter Tail Power Company super large general service agreement rates, case number PU-21-366.
Second.
On August 9th, 2021, Otter Tail Power filed an application for approval of an electric service agreement with a new prospective customer. The agreement provides that the customer would take electric service from Otter Tail Power under its super large general service section 10.06. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are: what is the value of Otter Tail's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Two, what is a just and reasonable rate of return on Otter Tail Power's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Number three, what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on Otter Tail Power's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public of North Dakota? Four, are Otter Tail Power's rate schedules designed in such a manner that they result in a basis of charge to its customers? Again, that is just and reasonable without undue discrimination. And five, whether the electric service agreement should be approved. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for a hearing must be received by September 17th, 2021. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
And good news, that concludes my portfolio.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Will you be issuing a dissenting opinion? Or
no.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Moving on to a few brief announcements. We have informal this afternoon to talk to Otter Tail Power about some advanced metering infrastructure that they are proposing, which I think was probably prompted by COVID and the realization that they still have a lot of meters that need to be read in-house. And so we're going to talk to them about that plan. Next week we have a hearing in Bowman on the Bowman Wind Project next Tuesday. That promises to be interesting. There's been quite a lot of input from agencies and the public on that project. And that kind of brings us through the rest of this month. So with that, we will take a brief recess and probably a short break, or do you guys want to go straight